Hola.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. It's a beautiful day here in Youngstown, like jacket and shorts kind of day. So you can get away with the shorts or you can get away with pants and a sweatshirt even. I had a hoodie on this morning.
Can I complain at you right off the get-go?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, all right. So people are already complaining that where's the fall weather? Like, is that all we ever do is no matter what's happening outside, we're complaining. It's too hot. It's too cold. Snow, rain, fall. Come on. Shut up.
I say it's beautiful almost every time we come on the show.
Yeah.
Even when it's raining, I'm excited about it.
I was complaining at you. I was complaining about literally everybody else.
When I first moved to the area, I remember I heard a radio host, it might have been like Ron Verb or one of those guys, say that in Ohio, you know, we have four seasons. We have almost winter, winter, still winter, and construction.
And How true is that?
I thought that was pretty pretty good snark. You know, the snark level on that was through the roof. How did the launch go? I saw SpaceX had another launch and you broadcast and stuff.
So this one was cool because Netflix put out a three-part series leading up to all the how they were selected for it and what they went through. And you got to know the characters that were going to be on this thing. Not like Blue Origin. We're like, oh, a CEO of blah, 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 and a operating officer of blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, I'm bought into their story. Right. but this was cool because these were regular people they shot up in the space.
Really?
Yeah.
Like just normal. Well, I mean, obviously not normal, Joe. I'm sure they.
Oh, no, they were normal. Like so they named the chair.
Okay.
So one was like prosperity and one was like hope and one was like generosity. And they picked people who lined up with whatever was in that seat.
Wow.
So like the first one was the main guy. He's a tech billionaire, credit card processing guy. He kicked in $100 million for this deal. And the beneficiary of the $100 million was going to go to St. Jude's Cancer Research. And so as part of that, they wanted to bring St. Jude's into it. They asked if there was anybody who had, you know, recovered and put their life back together, who was a shining example of what St. Jude's have done. And they came up with a girl who, when 10 years old, she had bone cancer. She rehabbed and then she became a nurse and worked in the same place that took care of her. So it was like crescendo type of storyline.
Yeah.
And so she came in one of the chairs. So she's she's disabled. Well, not fully disabled, but she had part of her leg replaced, which would disqualify you as being an astronaut if it were the legitimate deal. She got sent off into space.
Wow.
And then they did one during the Super Bowl in February. They ran a commercial that said, if you'd like to go to space, enter, send St. Jude's whatever dollars and you get entered in there. I didn't watch the Super Bowl, so I had no idea. How mad was I when I found that they picked some dude off the Super Bowl freaking ad? So anyway,
Joe would have went.
I wasn't
space.
Even entered. Couldn't have won. And then the next one was they wanted to feature an entrepreneur and somebody who was prosperity, who pulled up their bootstraps and became something. So they selected a previous. I think she was a fighter pilot and she was an entrepreneur and she again had great start. The whole thing was just packed in. Like you couldn't have written. Well, maybe they did write that. Show.
They
like,
did.
Dang it, they had me.
Yeah. Netflix spent good money to write a good story. That's how that works. Well, and it's interesting. We talk about good stories to segue into our topic on Tuesday. You mentioned talking about resonance and getting our frequencies right and what it takes to work with other people. And putting the right people in your orbit and the people that are there, even if they're not necessarily playing the same instrument, getting them on the same song. And what does that look like? And we spent some time, we alluded to it in Tuesday's conversation. And so, it's interesting because you're going to put these people up there that are great stories individually, but I wonder how that goes when you're in there. Is it like being on a roller coaster? Does it really not matter? Or do they have responsibilities on
that
flight?
Like it could fly itself. Like that ship doesn't need anybody to be there.
So it's like being
I'm
on a roller coaster.
Sure.
So you're just pretty much strapped in and going. So now they're going to start doing that more and more. Joe is going to space.
Totally.
Folks.
Like my wife, the whole time she's watching this, she was like, yeah, Joe. On space, there's nothing now keeping him from going to space, so he's going to space.
Yeah, that's so cool.
No doubt. So let's define this. So we brought up resonance a couple times. It's one of my favorite words. One of my heroes, Nikola Tesla, put a ton of time into developing his connection with what resonance is, and part of his 3-6-9 deal.
Yep.
You can master the universe if you master three things: energy, frequency, and Vibration, energy, frequency, and vibration.
You had this look on your face, like oh crap!
I better don't know this. My own guy's thing. What the heck? So anyway,
I've been in spaces where I've watched pastors forget like the Lord's Prayer and like really messes up. So you're all good.
I'm good. All right. So he did this test. Like he had this theory that everything has a frequency, a natural resonance to it. Mm-hmm. Buildings, bridges, people, yeah. Money, everything. Right, and you can take a tuning fork. And if you can get close to the resonance frequency of anything, and he took this little device, he called it the earthquake machine, okay. Something that he could fit in his pocket. And what he did was he set this little tuning fork to the frequency of a building, and he walked by the building, and the building began to do this. A little thing that was in his pocket, setting the resonance frequency, and you could have, its theory was, you can have great destruction, or you can have great creation if you set things in line. So then I started playing with this whole deal, like how, if I could figure out the frequency of money, and how do you figure out the frequency of something?
So let me ask a question, because yes. People are listening to this. When you hear that word, is it the same thing as like you meet somebody and you're like, wow, we just connect, right? No. You just say that. It's not the same
thing.
No,
it's not.
Okay.
So frequency, the definition, is a repetition of something over and over and over again. Vibration is repetition of something over again. Energy is repetition. So the definition is repeating a cycle that happens stretched out or in close deal. So your frequency with how often that you do a thing.
So this is measurable. This isn't just like a
exactly.
Win.
Exactly.
It's not like, oh, I walk into a room and like, oh, this kind of feels like home, or it smells like whatever. This is deeper than that.
Oh yeah, for okay. sure. Because it's measurable. It has some numbers to it. Then you can replicate it no matter where you go. So if I call you once a day, that's the frequency for you to know that I care about you. If I call you once a year, right? You might not get the same, even though I care about you,
but
setting those frequencies is something that you do on a repetition over a period of time.
Power of habit. Exactly. Stuff. Sure.
Yes.
No, that's, and I find that to be really fascinating, because, you know, so many of us function off of that feeling place. We're like, oh, well, that person feels right. And then we actually get into a relationship with them, and we're like, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
Or that job's going to be amazing because it looks greener than the job that we have. And then we get there and we realize, all right, nope. And I think a lot of that has to do with, we end up, you know, we use this kind of verbiage, right? We attract who we are, not what we want.
Yes.
And so a lot of times you attract the jobs, you know, that are in frequency with you.
But it's not static. That's the beautiful part of this, is that there's no such thing. You're either on frequency or off. So let's use something that's inanimate. The building, like, how do you figure out, like, that you don't walk by the building and there's a published frequency of that, right?
Sure.
So how do you know what the frequency of a job that you like is? Because you're going to dismiss, if you walk up to a job, you're like, I don't like that job.
Yeah.
Right. And you're going to think it's the nature of the job to have a certain frequency that just doesn't line up with you. Right.
So you're saying you can alter the frequency coming up to it.
For sure. Figuring out what the frequency that goes along with it, because everything's going to be, you know, have homeostasis where, you know, you're going to get along and it's going to be productive. And then you have alternating currents that are not going to be productive with one another. And it's going to be strife and conflict.
I use the illustration of oil and water, right?
That's it.
Just, they're not going to mix. It's good. So let's start at the baseline. Like, how do you figure out what your frequency is? Is there, you know, a test online, right? Like, can I take an Enneagram test and figure out my frequency?
Again, not static. It's not really static. You can choose, like, you can decide everything at this point.
Well, sure.
So use something like what my wife and I have this topic. So, or this talk on a regular basis. And even Ryan and I, they say they don't like something, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't like something only because the proper conditions haven't been met for them to like it. So let's just say, you know, we talk about nutrition all the time.
Yep.
You know, I love carbs, right?
Yeah.
Somebody says, hallelujah. I love carbs.
Yeah.
I don't like carbs,
yeah.
right? And it's not that I don't have something in me that dislikes carbs. I did a frequency of it, did certain things over a period of time that made my body change to the point where carbs don't make me happy. They make me sad, right? So if your carbs make you happy, it's not something you're stuck with. You just haven't done the proper things to put yourself in line. Now, if you choose those things on purpose, then you can choose what puts yourself in line with those things. You figure out a frequency. You know what? I don't like sleeping at night. So what would I have to do end to end to get to the point where I was on the same frequency as not sleeping at night? And you can do that with literally anything.
Okay. So some of this we're talking is habit. Some of this we're talking is mindset. You know, because you mentioned, oh, I don't like X, and therefore I put myself on that frequency. You know, this would be a super parent hack, because my kids, all of them, don't like vegetables.
Yes.
So what you're saying is we just have to create the right conditions for them to like vegetables. Now, I have a great story for this.
Sure.
So we went to my brother's house in Atlanta. I took he's now in Cleveland, but this was a couple of years ago. I flew down with Benjamin and Graham, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. My son, my brother has two sons, Levi and Asher, and I was like, the boys are going to play together. We're going to have a great time. We went to a Braves game at the stadium. We had a good time. But the one night for dinner, they made, I think it was chicken and something else and broccoli. And my kids were like, not eating broccoli. I don't like broccoli. And Asher goes, I love eating trees. And he has this whole game that he plays with trees. Now, that may be a little bit of psychological warfare played by mom and dad to get him to eat that. But when my boys reshaped that, well, I don't like broccoli, but I like eating trees. And it just flipped the script. Now, it was the same exact thing on their plate, but they ate trees on that trip. Now, I haven't been able to get them to eat it since, but in under the right conditions, that's the sort of thing you're talking about? Is that
okay,
you change
there was
the frequency
probably repetition.
That moment?
They'd probably have to see something over a period of time. They'd have to have a situation that played itself out that they liked and it felt good. And most of the time, it's assembling those things that feel good and fit in authentically, you end up doing more of. So if you say something like, I get in every day, I wake up, I love my body, I love my mind. And I do it every day because I'm setting the conditions that certain things, other things happen because I started out with those repetitions in the beginning of the day.
So if I'm going to be intentional about creating the frequencies that you want and the vibrations, all that sort of stuff, if I'm going to be intentional, what do I have to put into my world? You know, you mentioned affirmations a minute ago.
Yes.
You didn't use the word, but I know that's what you're doing. You know, we talk about vision boards, we talk about that sort of stuff. So what are the things that you have to do to say, all right, I'm not happy with the frequency I'm on. I'm not happy with the trajectory that I'm on. So I'm going to tweak this. And so we start mindset, we start words, we start habits, all three at the same time. Like, where do we start with that?
Most important, I guess, is if your lifestyle doesn't allow you to do the same thing over a period of time, if repetition is necessary and your life doesn't provide you with the ability, like if you're chaotic and every day is different and you can't get a mindset that is can repeat, then the rest of it really doesn't work because there's nothing to set it to. And that's why a lot of people feel like their life happens to them, because it literally does. They're by happenstance subscribing to things, and they show up because of those points of the repetitions just happen to them.
So instead of letting your life happen to you, you have to create a spot where you can have repetition.
Right.
Do you start for you? Does it start with affirmations and the words that you say every day? Does it start with mindset? Hey, I'm going to get up and I'm going to think this tomorrow. Does it start with, hey, I'm just going to pick one low hanging fruit and that habit I'm going to do every day?
I'll give you two answers because I've got a logical mind and you got an imaginative mind. And so we have to do different things here. I have to go to my spreadsheet. I have to make things terribly boring in my world in certain deals, places that I don't really want to get excited about, like counting money and counting calories and counting things that I don't really care about. I'll put those on autopilot and make them completely logical.
Right.
So if I like this shirt is like my Tuesday shirt. Right. And I'm not, there's no emotion put into it. I go and do the same regimen and I end up with this on Tuesday, sometimes not even by chance or just sometimes just by chance, but it just happens because I'm so regimented in so many other areas. I go to the grocery store and I buy the same shit every single time. Like I don't get imaginative with it. And so like all the stuff that I can put on that kind of autopilot that I don't have to worry about gets terribly boring, but it gets predictable. And if I can get 50% of my day, especially stuff I don't care about, to just do it on its own, I can reserve my emotional energy for things that matter. So structuring it that way. Now on your side, your carrot is going to be things that make you feel good, right? You're going to gravitate towards something. I gravitate towards Mr. Spreadsheet. You gravitate towards something else.
People.
I would suggest if you want to do the gym, you plan as many people to go to the gym with you as possibly that you can, right?
Were you on, you had to have been in my car 20 minutes ago talking with my wife, because I was saying to her, you know, we worked out with Johnny this morning at the gym. Now, did you start at 6 a.m. today?
I did not. No. So tomorrow.
Tomorrow. That's the story of my life. But, you know, I said, Joe's going to go at 6 a.m. And so my wife can really only go 2 days a week at that later time slot because she's like, I only have so many hours and there's stuff I need to get done while the kids are all in school. And so while it's nice and you can adjust your schedule because you're the pastor and the boss, I have to go pick up the kids at certain times. And, you know, that just doesn't work for me. So we're going to try and keep one day a week. But I was like, man, maybe I should go with Joe one day a week and maybe I should find somebody else. And then if I can line up five different people that I can go with, that will, because I'm there for the conversation and I happen to get the workout.
Right.
And
but that's the frequency, exactly right. What you need, but yeah. You have to use a different carrot than I do
exactly. To
make it so that those things happen. But there are some people that couldn't do it my way because they couldn't follow right. The spreadsheet because they like their life exciting, but they can't do it your way because they don't think that they can just plant people in their workout so that they have a reason to go.
Yeah. So 6 a.m. That's the time.
It is.
And you're going for 30 minutes?
Well, 6 was supposed to be for today. So my wife cooked a chicken yesterday. She bought a chicken from the...
Oh, the shorts?
Yes. Yeah. And so this chicken was not a chicken. It was like a turkey. Like it was it was big. I mean, this thing was huge. And so she put together this great meal. So I woke up this morning and it was still pretty disastrous from the cooking. So I did dishes. I was going to be thrown way out of my schedule if I did. So that was more of like a OCD moment more than anything else. But anyway, I wake up at 5 now, by the way. I scooted back a half hour. So I woke up at 5 and I went through the stuff. I started getting ready around 5:30 and that's when I noticed the kitchen. So it's probably going to be like, I leave at 5:30 and like slow walk into it. And I want to be home by 6:45 so I can go through my 7 o'clock routine. So it's probably going to be more like 5:45 to 6:45 is the short answer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, but we'll find a day in there. Cause you know, Joe was throwing me under the bus and I didn't want to work out with him cause it was early. And we'll have to find a day in there where we can do that every week.
We'll have an early morning version of it and we'll talk.
We'll do we'll do Joe and Doug live from the gym one day. That'd be fun.
It's an hour, might as well, right? Yeah.
Well, we're working out.
But I guess, when we talk about frequency, we usually think of like radio transmission or walkie talkies. And we think of it as a thing that we, you know, like resonance is such a completely different thing when you start making your body as that fork that is vibrating, right? And that movement and that those verbs that are vibrating and putting them on sync with another thing that's vibrating in that same deal. Beginning of the program used to talk about like you become the sum of the people that you hang out with.
That
is the frequency because you start tuning in with those people.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. I think, you know, for me being so socially driven, there are certain people that to use the word frequency, the frequency they put off is draining for my personality. Now they may fill somebody else's tank, but they're not filling mine.
Right.
And then other people, it's mutual. And then other people I get to pour out. And I love that side of things where I can find those people that are tuned to the same frequency. And it's just, wow, this is just natural. It's effortless. It's like the wheel has been greased and we're just going to be able to do this. And then other people I'm like dragging you behind me, you know, like, all right, how long do I do that? And then some people, everybody that's in their world, they look at and they go, well, this isn't who I want to be, but I'm the sum of these people.
Right.
And, you know, Dave Ramsey says, if you look at your, you know, 7 or whatever closest relationships, you usually make about the same amount of money. You have the same kind of, you know, thoughts on, you know, various topics. There may be a deviation here and there, but for the most part, you live in that pocket. So how important is it picking who's in proximity to you? You know, we've talked about this a little bit with your not having a Manchu list, but to essentially go, you know what, I need some people that I'm helping them tune their fork differently. I need some people that are on the same frequency, and then I need some people that are helping me tune my fork better. So, you know, all three kind of work in that space. Maxwell has a book, The 360 Degree Leader, and he says we need to have people that we're pulling up. We need to have people that we're journeying alongside, and we need to have people that are pulling us up.
All right, so you got to separate this. Okay. So the frequency is different than the energy component.
Okay.
The energy component is what propels you and thrusts you,
right?
And all of us are taking and giving as we go throughout. So we can sit here and if I worry about pouring into you and you worry about pouring into me, we're going to leave this engagement feeling like we both got something out of it.
Absolutely.
And there are other people out there that they are taking from you and you are giving to them. Yeah. So you leave it feeling very empty and they leave it feeling very full. So, but that's the energy that moves us. Like, you know, whenever I feel like I walked away, that I got zapped a little bit, I'm thankful that somebody probably got something out of it. I hope their day is better. My day sucks, but hopefully you have a good day. But so, you know, treating it that way, where if we challenge those people in our spheres to reciprocate what we're giving them. And it really, all it is asking. I'm not bashful, and I have no idea how to be subtle. And so if somebody feels like they're taking a little bit from me, I just tell them that they need to give back a little bit more. You know, they need to reciprocate back in my direction for us to keep hanging out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so terrible to even say out loud.
It's true. It is now forever on the internet. If you're in a relationship with Joe and you're zapping him, he's going to let you know.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, it's true though. And there's a healthy side to that where you should be able to communicate to people. This is where I'm at. This is what I need. But most people don't do that. Most people just, you know, will ghost you, swipe it under the rug and just move on. But to have a healthy self-awareness that, hey, this relationship for me is costing me. So if I'm going to be in that, I need to make sure I'm going in with reserves full into an encounter or whatever. But then you always have those surprise encounters, the customer that walks in that's, you know, all right, whew, I had to give a ton of my reserves away today because they came in and they had an agenda or their personality or whatever it is. But then you have people on your team, because not everybody is, you know, you have people that you're serving with. You have certainly, at a church of a few hundred people, you know, most people don't have enough people in their immediate family that they like everybody. You know, everybody's got a crazy uncle or whatever. And so you put 300 people in a room and, you know, there's going to be some people that you're like, yep, they're just on a different frequency.
Yeah. And I think Nate, there's sort of like a nature's solution, because I have a feeling if I zapped you too many times, you wouldn't want to hang out with me. I think that's how it's supposed to be, that if you're not going to reciprocate, I'm going to like go elsewhere. Listen,
wow.
And I told Ryan this the other day, in our lifetime, we only get to know about 2,000 people close enough to even have these conversations. Right. And there are 300 million people on this little country's, alone. Yeah. If there's somebody who's zapping you, there are a ton more to replace them. You need to be a little bit more selective, bring more people into those orbits. Because what's the worst case? You got a person that zaps you and takes all of your energy, and you're like, they're moving over. You bring a new person that you don't know that's going to have a little bit of a honeymoon thing where you're going to get something from. They might zap you too, but are you worse off?
Right. Well, do you think that's more difficult for introverts or extroverts? Simply because I know for me, I have a large turnover rate and I have a lot of acquaintances and I have a lot of people. I'm the bumblebee bouncing from flower to flower and I'm meeting this person and that person. And it's much more networking than it is deep relationship. And then I have my crew, if that makes sense. I have my go-tos, like, hey, need prayer for this, or hey, I need some counsel on this, or what do you think of X, or people that I just like to cut loose with. So yeah, I have that space, but then you get like an introvert, and if they have to let somebody go, it's devastating because they only have a handful that they feel like.
Well, listen to this. I'm going to connect back to the other thing. Remember, that's your carrot. So if you disconnect from someone, it demotivates you. So you have lots of turnover, and that's healthy. I connect with spreadsheets, right? And so if I lose a couple of people in my orbit, I'm not motivated. So that's the nature still giving me motivation to do it. Even when I have loss on the outside, it wasn't the reason I was doing this in the first place. And I can go invent another person. No hope lost.
Interesting.
See how that plugs right back into it?
Totally. You know, because it's obviously my wife and I are wired very differently. And so for me, I get the energy of the new relationship and the energy of finding those. And then when I find those people that I'm like, wow, not only do I like the energy, but we're on the same frequency with some stuff. Like, let's do some cool stuff together. Sometimes my wife is like slow to move into that. And I'm like, you know, I'm always the one like, wow, this is going to be fun. And she's like, sure it is, you know, like looking at me like, and she does much better at it publicly, but I know the conversations we have behind closed doors where she's trying to navigate her own energy level. She's trying to navigate her own frequency and she's trying to grow and all those sort of things. And so to put her, I have to be more mindful on the energy level that, hey, I'm depleting you. Because when we first got married, I would have people over the house every night of the week. And she looked at me like, the next person that walks in here, I'm going to stab them. Like, dude, this can't happen. Like, I need
safety. Okay. So let's talk about the straddling then. Yeah. So you probably pick people who have mutual benefit, like a mean or average down energy that you get back off of them, right? Because they have to kind of be in both orbits.
You know, it's interesting. I'm not necessarily as intentional with that as she probably is the filter for that, if that makes sense. Where, you know, for us to spend time with somebody on a regular basis, like she has to be in a pocket with that. Where me, I can make friends with the wall over there. So like, I'm like, oh, if my wife really enjoys these, you know, these people, like, all right, well, great. Then we're going to hang out and our families are going to connect. Where, cause it's much easier for me to make another friend.
Right. And you know, and let me give the dangers of kind of straddling that with two people where you end up having less conflict, right? The goal is not to have, it's not to have conflict. Like that is not your goal, to have harmony and peace and not make things happen. Remember, the first component of this is energy, things that propel us, right? When we make things average down where it doesn't make us all that happy and it doesn't make us all that sad, we have less energy to make those moves. And we end up, you know, the decay happens when we get idle, right? And we don't want to go idle, even though idle is easy. It's not where we're supposed to be. So resonance requires a little bit of entropy, a little bit of movement. And you don't get that when you straddle it and say, okay, well, for the sake of confrontation, I'm going to have somebody who's safe, and safe doesn't do the job all the time.
No, safe rarely does.
Yeah.
My wife's going on a women's retreat this weekend. There's 130 ladies. She's doing a breakout session. And this is the she goes through a process every time she goes and gets invited to speak. And then she's like, well, do I have anything to say? And, you know, and round and round. And then she's going to go and she's going to have a great time. And people are going to come up and say, wow, you know, such a great. But for her, she's, you know, going into this and, you know, she's excited for certain things, but not other things. And as I watch her step into some of the stuff, her whole talk this weekend is the best stuff exists. You basically outside of your comfort zone.
It's perfect. And I love it.
She's like, as she's writing this and bouncing ideas off me, she's literally like grunting and torturing herself through it, because it's literally everything in her wants to run to comfort. And I think that's true for most people. Our natural state is to run to that which feels best and is easiest. Through a series of conversations and a dream she had and stuff like that, I think it's going to be a really good thing, because she's right in the middle of realizing that like the best stuff exists in real life, where it doesn't always go together and it's uncomfortable and you don't like X or Y. And when you step into that, all these possibilities open up, where if you just stay there, you're just going to get the same thing you've always gotten.
Okay. So we're looking at it after the fact. So let's just say somebody wanted to put themselves in resonance with money, or they want to put themselves in a relationship, or put themselves in, you know, having the quick grocery store line and getting along with people and all of these things. Like if you're like, I want to figure out the frequency of all of this. So here's like the easy way to do it, because there are so many people on this planet. People have figured stuff out, even if they don't know how they figured it out. So all you got to do is go find somebody who's doing 100%. And you look at them and see what kind of stuff they do. And then some of the stuff is that led to the money. Some of the stuff led to the relationship. Yep. And you get to sit back and say, there's not going to be one thing that made them come into money or come into easy relationships or whatever. But you're going to find out the stuff that does and then do all of those things. And you're going to have stuff that probably isn't involved and don't do any of those stuff. And guess what you end up? Your flavor, your recipe of finding the frequency even by happenstance.
So most people will never find those people because they feel like, well, I don't want to bother them. You know, I'm probably just going to be annoying. Most of those people are waiting for the person to come along and be like, you're really successful in this. I want to be that. What do I need to do? I'll pick you up at the airport at 5 a.m. Like, what, you tell me what I need to do to be around you, because you have something that I want. You know, those compliments, and I've had them at different times from people as a pastor, where, you know, I want what you have is a huge compliment. And so when somebody says that, I'm like, I'll give you everything I got. I'm not sure I have all that. You know, we always downplay our strengths a bit, but you know, I can remember, as a young pastor before I, you know, got married, trying to find one or two people that I was like, man, they have older kids. They've done well. Their kids are well adjusted. You know, they're good academically. They seem to be healthy. All right, what'd you do? You know, I had a conversation with my grandmother at one point, because she raised eight kids. And not a perfect house, but she did some things really, really well. And, you know, all of her kids have all been fairly successful financially, business wise. You know, a lot of them, you know, did well in college, and, you know, they're all, you know, happily married in these long relationships and have all raised their kids. So I asked my grandma when Charlotte was born, I said, so what's the secret? Like, what's the secret sauce? Like, what you do, you know? There's usually like one swing and a miss, but you're like pretty much 8 for 8. I mean, it's pretty good. And then the grandkids are all pretty good. And then the you know, now the great grandkids, and you look at that and like, well, is it DNA? Like, or what are you doing? And she had two simple things. She said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Kids need consistency. And when they know they can trust your word, you know, you'll get the behaviors that you're saying yes to or no to. And then the second thing she said was that my grandfather's name was Dick. He passed 2006, I think. She was like, even if I thought he was dead wrong, the kids would never know.
Yep.
She's like, we would go privately and I would say, I think you're not being smart about this or not. I don't agree with you. But once he made a decision, I backed him to the hilt publicly, even if I thought the punishment was too much or I thought it was over the top. And so we were a unified front. There was nobody coming to me saying, hey, can I go to Johnny's right. house or whatever? And they had already asked and been told no, because they knew that I was going to check, and they knew if they were trying to play one against the other, just wasn't going to happen. Right. And those are like literally the two pieces of advice. I'm like, that sounds really simple. And most of the time it is the really simple stuff like that, that you do consistently over and over and over and faithfully in that. That's just absolutely wild. What is something right now that Joe Danier is trying to tune his fork to?
I'm trying to be a marathon runner. And I have a bunch of people that I follow online, and I'm trying to emulate what they do, how often they run. It's a slow coming. Like, it really is, where I get challenged and I think I'm on the right frequency. And I think part of my life is going counter because I can't do some of the stuff that they can. If I could, I totally would, but sure. I just can't. I can't do it physically. So there might be a time when my schedule allows me to do more of this stuff, but it's in my head. I'm still going to do that because I know that I'm like, I got 50% of the recipe and it tastes like shit. Right. I know it tastes like shit because the other 50% is probably meaningful.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at that. You know, any recipe you have, you know, if you like use salt instead of sugar, or you know, you don't put one ingredient in, it can throw the whole thing off.
Right. And think of most people, though, if they went through this process, I want to look like that. Right.
Yeah.
They would get to the first thing that person done. They'd have an objection. Well, I can't do that. Like, I sound all like that person. Like, oh, you got to eat just healthy foods. Ooh, I really like, you know, whatever, cinnamon rolls.
Yeah.
But there would be enough things that were in your control that you'd be unwilling to part with, let alone the ones that are a little out of your control that you'd have to get good at. So, I mean, there's some easy ones. Like, I consider finding the frequency of a building a hard version. I consider like making more money an easy version, because all of that stuff, nothing's going to tell you no in that. It's an inanimate object that doesn't care if it has you or you have it, and it's under your, you know, control.
Interesting. So in that, you know, you found some people to follow.
Yes.
Have you found some people to run with?
Yes.
And what else are you doing to tune your fork?
I have lots of conversations. When I come across someone who says they run, I want to know what they do. And my big hang up is breathing, where I think I'm doing it wrong. So everybody that I can, and a lot of people don't struggle with the breathing part. So when they talk about breathing, you're like, yeah, it's all about the rhythm of the breathing and whatever. I'm like, dude, my brain is not as, I'm forgetting to breathe, right? How do you make brain remember to breathe, right? They don't have that problem. Somehow I do.
Yeah, that's wild. I think, you know, if I was looking at my tuning fork, I think that the conversations that I've been having lately have all been around finance and health and figuring out, all right, how do I tune that so that we can have more money flowing in there? And how do we make an investment over here? And how do we do some of that stuff? And it's interesting because that's a different tune than just 15 years ago when I was getting married and my credit score was barely over 500. And like,
you know, that's everybody for some, like I said, we have some natural consequences that we're fighting. Like, nature is protecting us from having this illumination, because it's not that the information isn't there,
right?
But we're fighting some biology that keeps a majority of us below understanding for some reason. And it's not that it's not understandable. Like, nature tries to teach us, but it also is keeping us separated from being able to nail it, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that totally makes sense. Some of it is, you know, nurtured. Like, you know, I learned the financial habits and the eating habits of my mom and dad growing up. And then, but at some point you got to own it. like I'm 36, like at some point it's my fault.
Right.
And there has to be new information. And I look back and I think of, you know, early on in our marriage, when we talk about like, all right, what are we going to do today because we have $43 and we need gas and we need groceries, you know. I remember very vividly some of those conversations where I was like, well, we're just gonna open a credit card. Like, I don't know what to do. and now, you know, I would never do that. And the way we're, you know, and there we were talking about $10 and now we're talking about thousands of dollars and how do we move that around? How do we make it work for us? And what do we do with this? And do we pay this or do we, you know, shift this money around? And it's a different conversation because we're thinking differently. We've tuned our fork.
Yeah. Let me explain this to you. And that's a lot of the objections that people would have. I framed it as if people were being irresponsible or just making excuses, but a lot of people think they have to come to that conclusion because they have no other choice. You have to open the card. Even if you had a principle that said the principle that's bigger than the don't get into debt principle is the eat or put gas in your car principle.
Yeah.
Right. But the tuning is you're going to file that away is that credit you had to do, right? Not that you had to do it against this. And I'm going to continue believing what I did before, which is credit stupid. And I'm going to squish it the moment that I can. And I have a feeling most of us forgot that was a thing because the credit thing desensitized us to the fact that was a stupid decision until later when you had stupid mountain that was crushing you. Right.
Yeah. Well, to use a great financial illustration, and it's a Bible illustration.
Is it really? Can I hit the button for this illustration? No, it's not. You gotta put it as a,
A verse. It does remind me of a scripture.
Oh, yes.
You can push the button.
Thank you.
And in Malachi, we're told to bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. And God puts out this challenge. He says, test me in this and see if I won't open the windows of heaven to you. See if I won't open the floodgates of blessing. And constantly the conversation I have as pastor, and some of it has been the way that churches have framed this, and you know, the church is just out for money, etc. But God knows how the rules of the universe work, and so what he tells us is that when I get 100, I give back 10. When he brought in, you know, 10 cows, I gave one to the Lord. When, you know, across the board, whether it's money or anything else, the first thing I should do is give. And when I tune my fork that way. And so he gives an easy way. He's like, hey, he's like, you made $500 this week. Guess what? Start out by giving 50. It's super easy. You don't have to think about it. Comes into the house of the Lord. And then what ends up happening though, is you're tuning yourself to be generous and you're tuning yourself, not just for that, but for you'll reap what you sow, and what you put out comes back. Now you may not get a $50 check in the mail, but you might get an opportunity. You may not get a $50 check that week, but 6 months from now that you've consistently tuned your fork this way, then all of a sudden this thing pops into your life and you go, oh, where did that come from? Well, look at this opportunity. Surprise. And they may not have a direct correlation where you can go, oh, we did that. But something like that is God's way of saying, hey, if you do this at this frequency, you're going to become generous and you're going to step into, oh, somebody has a need. You know what? Yeah. I have $300 to help take care of X, Y, or Z. And that is, you know, a powerful illustration spiritually, because people argue all the time. Well, you know, do we really have to give to the church? I mean, you don't have to. Like, God says he owns a cattle on a thousand hills. Like, you know, he'll send money from anywhere. But if you want to be generous, it's a great way to start out in that process and to learn the frequency of, hey, I received something, I should give something. I received something, I should give something. And then all of a sudden you tuned your fork that way and look out, the opportunities will come for you to give and for you to be blessed.
All right. And final thought here. So if one of the reoccurring themes with successful people is their generosity.
Yeah, 100%. Okay?
And now the public 100%. Might the public might argue that, of course, they're successful, they're going to be generous. I contend that they are successful because of that generosity.
Absolutely. 100%. Without a doubt, generosity is the key to unlocking success. You can be stingy all you want, and everybody points to the Scrooge McDuck, you know, the one you know, person out there, but if you look at some of those millionaires, billionaires, whoever you want to throw in there, most of them, if not a very, very large percentage, I don't want to put a number on it, but more than half are giving and pouring into things that matter to them, dumping hundreds of millions of dollars into various things. And they never seem to run out of money when they do that. It's wild.
It's crazy. All right.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us and we'll see you back here next.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.